Our next speaker is Dr. Chad Godsey, and he will be presenting on bridging the gap between innovation and adoption in today's Precision Ag. Thank you.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? All right. So I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today. Hopefully I'll kind of build on some of what both Dave said and Newell said from kind of a private sector. And I guess I'll give you a little bit of background to start with so you know where maybe some of my biases are coming from and some of my thoughts. And that may explain some of the later slides that I go into more discussion. Before I started doing some private consulting, I worked at Oklahoma State for 7 years in research and extension. Majority of it was spent in extension there in Oklahoma. And really, I enjoyed the academic world, but from the extension standpoint, I kind of grew frustrated with maybe the lack of some of the adoption, some of the stuff that Dr. Ron was doing there, and we didn't have a huge, quick adoption was not realized, and it not only with sensor-based stuff, but other stuff in the precision ag world in general. And then also in 2012-13, we had an opportunity to move back around a family farm, so I was assisting with management of the family farm. And some of the background, I guess, when I started out on my own was that every producer was really at a separate or their own point in that, on that adoption curve. You know, we've got the early adopters and some of the late adopters. But everybody is at a unique point. And to the comment earlier about, you know, the easy button, and I think that's where sometimes we get into trouble. Ideally, we would like that easy button to hit. But everybody's at a different situation that you know, like the genetics, hybrid by environment, you know, interactions with management. So everybody's at a different point. And the one thing that I've realized, and I realized it pretty quickly, is that cookie cutter approaches really don't work. They may work for some things, you know, seeding. We'd have an argument or discussion about seeding rates in certain areas. But to the large extent, those cookie cutter approaches don't work. And what I've found is that I've had discussion with a lot of industry people, you know, whether it be you know, DuPont or climate or stuff like that. And really, if what we have found is that for each individual, we really can't consult on more than 15 or 20,000 acres if we're doing soil sampling or prescriptions, if we want to do a good job. And you think about, you know, a lot of people are pressed to sign up 100,000 acres, 150,000 acres. And so that's one thing that we have realized is that if we really want to help somebody improve their efficiency, whether it be nitrogen use efficiency or water use efficiency, is that we can't have an abundant amount of acres for each person, and that goes back to that, or the bottom comment is just it's most prescriptions should be a dialogue. That's the way we treat it, is a dialogue between the producer and us until we get a final, you know, a final prescription, whether it be seeding or fertility. This is just this was pulled out of the Crop Life Purdue. I think Tony Vine maybe helped with this survey. And so these next couple slides, just to give you kind of an idea from an industry perspective on what dealers, precision ag dealers, are offering. And so it's kind of interesting, you know, really 2012, 2013, we really saw an adoption or an increase. It's not necessarily adoption, but just more increased offerings in some of the things. Soil sampling is obviously the biggest thing, like Dr. Franzen talked about earlier in the session. When we pull out and just look at a variable rate fertilizer and seed, you can see quite a drastic increase in 2013. And from a business perspective, you know, part of the reason why we've seen such a huge increase is, you know, when we look at profit margins or gross margins, you know, with soil sampling, prescriptions, you know, you can have gross margins of 20, you know, or excuse me, 60 to 80% on some of those things. Whereas if we think about precision ag hardware, you know, that margin is not there. And so from an industry perspective and business perspective, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to generate revenue with those services. Now, I would hope that they added it because the producers were requesting it and wanting it. But that's probably up for debate. But a huge spike in 2013. So we'll kind of get into some of the some of my points, I guess. And Newell really hit a lot of these. A lot of these are addressed. Some of these things already. From my perspective, some of the gaps in adoption. You know, when we look at in recent history, the last year, 2 years, 3 years. You know, that race for that piece of the data pie really has farmers' heads spinning. I mean, and I get it from both a kind of a farmer perspective and business. I mean, we typically, usually every month, we have at least one or two calls from a business or outside person wanting to visit with us about, you know, data, collecting data or maintaining or housing data. And so it's that way for the farmer as well. And the big thing with that is that really a lot of the data people, I'll call them, are not providing a solution. And that goes back to the first comment that was made before we got started in here, and that the farmer wants that easy button. He wants an answer. In a lot of cases now, we don't have that answer associated with that data service. The software as a service, like I commented earlier, high margins, and it's reoccurring revenue. In the precision ag business world, we constantly hear about reoccurring revenue. We see that in equipment dealers like John Deere and Case, all concerned with that. My next point is the constant and high rate of change in service providers, and that's just with the over the last 3-4 years, a huge number of startups in that data space, and I mean every month we're dwindling down a little bit, or somebody's getting bought by somebody else, so we're narrowing that, and I guess maybe in another year or 2 years we'll know who the long term players are in that space. But once again, the farmers are kind of sitting on the sidelines to some extent, just waiting to see what happens. My next comment, or I think one of the causes for that gap in adoption rates is a lot of things that we've tried to develop maybe have tried to replace the boots on the ground guys, and that's something that I think. You know, we take for instance, to use an example, you know, some of the nitrogen modeling that's trying to be done now and commercialized and marketed. You know, that's a lot of consultants out there, private consultants, take that as a you're trying to replace me type of thing, and water management is in that same boat. We need to develop tools to complement or that they can utilize to help make better recommendations. So I think in some cases in the past we've kind of skipped over those private consultants that are there on a weekly basis, the crop scouts. So that's important that I think that we don't try to replace those guys, at least, you know, the boots on the ground people, because I think that's a critical piece. And then my last comment here is just that, you know, with some of the software we've seen developed, and I won't name any names, but just the software developers or those of the models or whatever it may be, or software packages, just don't have a real good connection with what farmers see or consultants see in the real world on a daily basis. So I think there definitely is a disconnect. When I step back and kind of look at maybe where potentially that breakdown has occurred, and you know I come from I remember some things when I was at CSU in my undergrad, in the mid-90s, late-90s, and then at K-State for my graduate degrees. The industry, just from you know, the mid-90s, late-90s to now, it seems like in general the industry and the, you know, university or ARS, USDA interaction is not what it used to be. And it probably no doubt varies by region, but that's just kind of my general consensus, is that there's not as much back and forth as there used to be. And then also, I think sometimes, and this goes back to what Dr. Mingle mentioned about, you know, extension service in some areas, maybe not as strong as it used to be. But one of the things that I see, at least in Colorado and in Oklahoma when I was there, is that it doesn't seem like we get as much feedback from that producer back to the university. And once again, I know that varies a lot by region and locale. But just one of the things that I've kind of observed from the outside looking back now. But ultimately, and this has been mentioned throughout, I mean, it's the we need to focus on the end game. So, you know, what will be acceptable in those producers' eyes? You know, we've tried to develop some tools, precision ag tools or decision aids within our business. And the first thing we start with is at the producer level and say, what data will you be willing to manually enter if we request manual entry? And most of them say none. And then so we know we've got to design something where there's no data entry, which is up for another discussion. But so that's kind of where I see some of the potential breakdowns. And I guess kind of some of my thoughts as far as trying to bridge that gap or get us back on that rate of higher adoption with some of these technologies where they make sense. One of the things that we really try to do is that end-of-year evaluation. So every year, and that gets back to the discussion on there's only so many acres that you can consult on and actually do a good job. You know, we try to evaluate profitability or nitrogen use efficiency at the end of the year. So that way we know how many dollars per acre we lost or made this guy on an annual basis. And that's one of the things that I don't see a lot of people taking that extra step. It does take time, but it does. We get a lot of value from it, definitely. Second point, keep expertise local. And this kind of goes back to the boots on the ground guys. You know, a lot of things that we do, we all live in unique or have unique soils, environments in all of our areas where we're from. And it goes back to that comment about the cookie cutter approach. Not everything works everywhere. So we've got to maintain some flexibility as far as giving local guys that final say, in maybe how much credit they give to residual nitrogen or something like that. You know, seeding rates, what's our optimum seeding rates for those soil types. And when we think about precision ag, I mean, it's we're managing that variability at various scales. But we know that every acre is unique and every field is unique. And then as well, every operation is unique. So no one size fits all. So we always try to keep that in mind. And that last point is just sell a solution, and that goes back to what we've talked about: farmers want a solution. They don't want to have to interpret data, or most of them don't want to. They just want a solution. In summary, I think really the next 18 to 24 months will be very telling. And I say this very generically in that. Precision ag in general will either make very big strides or we're not going to move forward much at all. And some of that comes from commodity markets the way they are now. But I think a big part of it is farmers really are just waiting to see who's left standing in the end as far as service providers and things like that. And then I always urge my clients and whoever I talk to is keep that data local. And it, my philosophy, and this was goes back to a Kansas farmer I used to work with, and I can't remember his name, but his deal was with his data. He said, "Why do I care what happens on somebody else's farm?" And for the most part, I mean that's very true, because those management, those interactions. Now there's some things where you know aggregating data is beneficial, definitely, but we know everybody's got unique environments. So keep data local. Need to focus on producers and develop solutions around their needs, and that's kind of what we've been commenting on all morning is finding solutions that those farmers will easily adopt. So I think with that, that's all I have. I'd gladly entertain any questions or comments. Or
thank you. Any question for Chad? Chad, we have a question here.
Thanks for a great presentation from a different perspective than most of us. I'd like to ask you a question about your experience with imaging. So I come from the Southeast, and many of our consultants there have not found a way to monetize the value of images. You know, what can I get out of it so I can pass on some information to my clients? So have you done this, and what is your perception of the value of an image, and how have you been able to monetize that?
Okay, good question. The question was around imaging, and essentially trying to find a way or develop a way to monetize that and you know have it as an offering and getting some use out of it from not only my purpose and a farmer's perspective. So that's a really good question. And you know we started out 4 or 5 years ago whenever the drone craze started, and we crashed a lot and spent a lot of money and didn't make anything off of it. And really, we never saw, we have yet to see, you know, any long-term potential with that. I mean, currently the way it stands. And a lot of that is, I mean, we have tools that we could use to benefit in some of the high-value crops, but we'll, you know, producers really aren't willing to pay what it would take for us to make, you know, to generate or break even. You know, the satellite imagery, from what I have seen, you know, once again, there's so many different providers. I mean, the imagery is the same because it's coming from just a few sources. But the thing that we see is with the imagery currently is that people start off using it, and then by the end of the season, they get tired of looking at it. And so we really are kind of... We've got to get it to a point where it's easy to understand or easier to understand and to quantify some of those differences for it to be used day in and day out. I feel so, and I know in Northeast Colorado the you know majority of our corn acres are irrigated, and you know you go to a meeting with. You know about imagery or offerings, and you know the number one example is you can catch if a nozzle's plugged. Well, and that goes back to the marketing comment that somebody made earlier. I mean they do a good job marketing that, but we've really yet to extract a lot of value from that. So that's a long-winded answer, but I don't have a good answer for you. I guess that's why I sidestepped the question. So.
Another question?
So you mentioned one of the gaps was getting farmers to enter information manually. For example, where do you think, in general, farm management software fits in, and how much do you rely on the farmer having software as a service or farm management software that they like to use? Or do you have one you recommend, for example, to kind of simplify that?
Yeah, and that's a good question. Question was about software, data management software, or farm management software, and that's kind of a really this late summer and winter we're really starting to evaluate that, and that's a space that is changing so fast as well with mergers and stuff, So it's really, we've used a combination of several things, and we'll visit with you about how we do it. But we're always trying to streamline that process, make it easier. But that's probably one of our biggest challenges is getting data and not spending a lot of time or money to get it. So, good question.
Any other question? Thank you, Chad.